This week is a very special episode of the Stealth Podcast Show. I've got with me Brandon Smith of Dwight Illustrations, talking to him about his artwork as a mecha artist and his journey towards becoming such. We're also going to be talking shop about some nerd things as well. This is the first part of an interview of the last three episodes of the season, and part two will be up next week. And so I hope you guys will enjoy this week's interview with Brandon Smith. All that and more on this week's episode of The Stuff Podcast Show. Welcome to The Stuff, the podcast where you and I literally talk about what else? Stuff. This is your Comedic Escapades podcast show, and I'm your host, Ian Walker. Now, let's go talk about some stuff. All right, guys, this is Ian Walker for the Stuff Podcast Show. I'm here with my man, Brandon Dwight Smith.
Yes.
Dwight Illustrations.
Hello.
Here in beautiful Sacramento in front of Oblivion Comics.
Is that Oblivion?
Yeah, Oblivion Comics and Coffee.
And Coffee.
Just hanging out, man. And Brandon is like my brother. This is a special interview for me. Because as an artist myself, I've literally watched the evolution of this dude become an artist from jump, from when it came to him picking what type of paper he should draw on.
It's been an evolution since 2009. I think that's when I bought my first bamboo tablet.
Right.
I didn't even know what it was.
He sure did not. He's calling me, hey, Ian. So, question, what is this digital art thing? And I was telling you everything, and now the script is totally flipped now. I barely draw. I do paintings, but I don't draw like I used to. I'm doing podcasting and painting, and you're now the digital artist, and I'm coming to you being like, hey, so what's the new stuff? Oh, you got this new tablet? Like, can I play with that?
Like, can I touch that without can a break?
Is it cool? How do you use this? Like, you're telling me everything, man, now. But I'm proud, though, because, like I said, I've seen it from the very beginning. And you have just grown to be a very dope and cool artist, man.
I appreciate that.
Really cool.
Thank you.
So, everybody that doesn't know you, let them know who is Brandon Smith, a.k.a. Dwight Illustrations.
Well, we kind of touched a little bit on it. I started in 2009. I'm going to say what everybody else says. I like drawing since I was young. Okay, everyone says that. So, fast forward to 2009, 10 years ago, picked up my first bamboo tablet. Uh-huh. And I bought I downloaded a free copy of Manga Studios Light.
The EX version, right?
It wasn't even the EX version. It was like the Light EX trial version. Oh. It was the Light version.
The Light version with the 30-day trial?
Yeah. And I kept renewing the 30-day trial, right? Trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And I had absolutely no idea. So I've been inspired. As of lately, we can go through all the steps of the evolution later, but where I'm at now is I spent a lot of time and I find a lot of value in going to different conventions and getting in front of the people who appreciate my art, my style art, which as of lately is going more towards the mech style.
Okay.
So that's where I have a wife and two girls at home, and my wife, she's real supportive of what I'm doing, so I'm grateful for that because sometimes an adventure this big, you can't do it if family isn't on board. You know?
Right.
That's important too, right? So, yeah.
That's dope, man. So, what are... wow, I find it amazing how, you know, we was out here catching up, chopping it up. Because he's here in Sacramento and I'm out in Monterey. And, you know, a moment ago, you know, we were talking. There was no traffic, no noise, no nothing.
No.
Now, as soon as I hit record...
Yeah.
Everybody wants
got
to come
trains.
Alive. Sacramento wants to come alive now. It's a,
yeah,
it's a city or something.
But it is Friday night.
Yeah, it is Friday night.
So in about an hour, this place is going to turn into something completely different.
Yeah. Better wrap it up before then, me. So, nah, it's really cool seeing what you're doing. Now, you're a huge, huge Transformers fan.
I am. Very huge.
So tell us the extent of your fandom, bro.
That goes back long before the movies. For those of you who do not know where it came from, that was an 80s cartoon. There's two different generations depending on when you came in.
I'm unleashed something right now.
Yes, I'm Gen 1. At least that's where it started. Gen 1 is still popular now amongst comic book enthusiasts, pop culture, things like that. The latest Bumblebee movie obviously paid a lot of tribute to that, so I was really happy that we finally got the movie.
You're going to hate my guts, bro. I still never saw Bumblebee.
You know, better to have not seen it than to have seen it and not like it. Now, I tell you why. The people who don't like this movie, specifically,
right,
are the people who really don't understand where Transformers started.
Right.
Because it doesn't have all the cooler... I mean, some of the cars are cool, but it doesn't really have all the new flashier stuff. Like
it's not a Michael Bay film. Yeah,
yeah, you're not going to see Lamborghinis and Ferraris driving down the streets. Some people are like, ah, no fast cars? Okay, I'm good. It's not going to have the explosions, and it's not going to have all of that. There is definitely some action to it, but this is a real fan service. And as a Gen 1 fan myself, I really appreciated where they went. They were real loyal. Some of the Transformers don't really have an earthly... Well, yeah, actually do have an earthly canon, but not to the same... It's not an earthly canon that a movie, I feel, can really tell. That's not the story they can tell. So for the material they had, I thought it was really, really well done. And I am excited for the next one. Hopefully there will be another one. But yeah, so I've worked in the car business as an auto body reconditioning. So I've always been around cars and painting to some degree. So... I wish I could say that made things easier, but it didn't. What it did do, though, is it helped me to understand the basic concept of values and colors.
Right.
So with the Transformer love in the background, with my time in the automotive business, Mecha in general, right, has really pulled on my heartstrings in the last 6 months. So that's really where I'm going with that. That's pretty much Transformers is why I'm doing that.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So all of your artwork lately that I've seen, is more towards that Transformers type artwork. Before, when you were first starting, you were doing superheroes and things like that, which is cool. You have a very unique style. It's a style that I have never seen before, and a style a lot of people haven't seen before. He has a very cool mix of monochrome with he's. I would probably describe Brandon as monochrome with a dash of color. And even his colored works still have that monochrome feel to it still. Even though it's purple, it's like...
Yeah.
But it looks sick the way you do it, which I have never seen before. It's like, okay, generally like I wouldn't be down with that, but that looks tight.
I paint everything in values first, black and white. And then if I decide I want to add color to it, I will. I'll paint in some color. I'm hoping to have some process videos of how I do it at some point in the future. But so at some point during the painting, I'll ask myself, if I just added an accent color, would this painting be okay as is? And sometimes, the answer is yeah. Just throw some green on it. I'm working on a Cyborg series right now where it's literally called Cyborg Pink, Cyborg Green, Cyborg whatever it is. And it's just a black and white image with that specific color attached to it. Then I find ways to incorporate it in there because I like the way the color pops on the page, right, or on the image.
Right.
So that's my, it's...
Now is this Cyborg series. What do you mean by Cyborg? Is it like original art?
Yes.
Okay.
So it is original art. And I'm a firm believer that there are two different types of artists. First off, I believe anyone can be an artist by the very definition. Anyone can look at something created.
Right.
Or imitate it. But it takes a certain skill set to learn and develop, which some people can still do, to be a creator. And that comes into creating your own stuff,
right?
Rather than looking at something that's already been done over and over and saying, I can do that too. So I'm, like you mentioned, doing a lot of superhero stuff. That's what the fans want to see.
Right.
But I'm thinking, well, what direction can I take my personal interest? And how do I combine some elements of pop culture with some of my own style, my own interests? And that's where I'm bringing in the Cyborg stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of people can identify with that. Uh-huh. And it still allows me to be who I am as an artist, create my own original stuff, but still appeal to fans of the genre that can appreciate.
Right. And that'd be cool, too, because when you appeal to getting those people who are into the Transformers or into even the manga stuff like Robotech or Gundam or whatever, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they'll see your original art and they'll see something new, something different. Something original, mm-hmm. and quite possibly gravitate to it, which is really cool. And we've had this conversation before, which is, you know, again, which is like a funny thing because it's like script is flipped now so hard right now. And you're absolutely right. That is the mark of a true creative artist.
Creative artist, yes.
Someone that can create from the mind and from the heart, mm-hmm. and still not lose their identity with the art because they're creating something that's not really them. And sometimes, unless you sincerely do have that love, sometimes fan art can lead you down that path of just being soulless, kind of. You're just doing it just for the sake of getting a buck, or you know, whatever, and you don't really have an affinity for it, or you really don't have a love for it.
Yeah.
And then that's when you start seeing people's artwork suffer, or you see an artist start getting complacent in their style and what they do.
I agree.
Pushing themselves.
I agree 100%. And I feel some artists, two things. One, obviously, if you're making a living because you're being hired by, you know, a major company to do this, and then you have to do what you're being paid to do. Mm-hmm. And even a fan who sees you at a convention commissions you to do a Spider-Man or a Wonder Woman. You got to do what you got to do.
Right.
However, very few artists who stay on that path, I should say very few, but not every artist who stay on that path are going to find their own identity. And, you know, there are some artists out there who bring such a unique style, even to a genre that's been around for decades, still stand out because they're bringing something new to something old and familiar, right? I guess it's just every artist has to make that decision as to whether or not they want to stay on that path or if they really want to let their creative wings spread and take it in another direction. And I think for me, I've kind of stopped apologizing for not doing what I felt everyone wants to see me do. I go to a convention, for example, and, oh, hey, do you have a picture of Wolverine? Or, hey, do you have a picture of these? All great characters. All of them great characters. And I really appreciate the passion the fans have for that. But at some point I said, well, you know, no, I don't have that character, and I probably never will.
Right.
But if you want to follow me down this path, this is what I have to offer.
Right.
And that's where I'm at right now.
There you go. Hey, do you find it difficult to do that at first when you first started?
It was daunting.
Yeah.
If it's your passion, it's easy to do, but it's daunting because obviously in the back of your mind, you're always thinking, are people really going to like this?
Right.
And that's where the apology that I spoke about comes in. You start apologizing for your work. You find yourself, oh, no one liked that, so I'm just not going to do it again. That's surrendering your own interest because you think you know what other people want to see. And I think that's unfair for any artist to have to put themselves through that.
Mm-hmm.
They should say, this is what I really want to do. You're going to lose some fans.
Right.
Some people are, you know, they're not going to like it. But then you're going to gain a whole new set of new fans who will appreciate it. And that's one of the biggest payoffs is when someone comes to your table or they reach out to you on Instagram or they reach out to you on email and says, I would like this photo or this painting. Or whatever it is, whether you're a photographer or a picture or whatever it is, and it's something that you created from scratch, and they're willing to invest in that. That's a feeling you can't escape, right?
No, you sure could not, dude.
Yeah.
You sure could not, man. When I do with my paintings, because I do Afrocentric painting and artwork.
Right.
And
very good at it, too.
When you have someone that sees a work of art, and I have two clients that are probably my strongest. When they have money, they are buying. It's like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's super cool. And when they buy it for, you know, and you got through this. The story I always tell a lot of people is when I was younger, it was the very first times I did an artist alley table,
mm-hmm.
where I had a drawing Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, yeah.
Cloak and Dagger drawing, pencil.
Cloak and Dagger, okay.
And it was dope. Okay, it was tight. And my dad saw traditional hand drawn. Yeah, original. My dad saw it. He's like, man, this is dope. This is so good. You know, how much you gonna sell this for? I'm like, oh, I'll sell it for about, you know, 50-60 bucks. He's like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean 50-60 bucks?
Right.
This is worth way more than that. You should be selling this for at least $200.
Oh wow.
Like,
why?
I was like, Daddy, look, man. You don't know what you're talking about, man. People don't really know, ain't gonna spend that much money on that stuff. You know, they're not gonna do that. So, no, you need to value yourself, value your art, value your craft.
Right.
He says, tell you what, he's all, okay, fine. He said, knock it down, do $125. I was like, Dad, not. I fought him on it, Fine, I'm like, all right, fine, 125, okay, fine. Went there, set up my table. Got everything set up, ready to go, set up all my stuff. First customer, guy walks by. He walks by my table once. Walks by twice, 5 minutes later.
And he's looking at the paint.
He comes back.
The art.
Over, yeah, and he looks at it. He's looking at the book. He's open. Because it's my best thing, so I'm going to show the best thing.
Right.
And he's looking at it. He finally comes over. He starts perusing through it. He keeps going back to Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah.
He's flipping through everything. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And he goes back to Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, speaking to him.
He looks at everything else, and then he goes back to clap. Well, I'm recording, man. You gotta keep going, bro. Thank you, though.
People are broke right now.
Oh, yeah? All right. People are broke right now. It's all good.
Okay, so that just happened. Welcome to
Sack. Welcome to Sack. I love this place.
No, it's a good place.
He told me, so he kept going back to it, and then finally, he went back there. He said, how much is this? And I almost said $60, but I was like, 125, he's off. All right.
Just like
bam,
that.
Right there, the very first sale of the day. So Cloak and Dagger immediately for 125. At that point, I realized the value of my work.
Right.
And what you create. If people like it enough
and
it speaks to them, they will buy it. Now I'm selling paintings when I do them. We're talking the last, I had a painting commission that I'm finishing up. $650, you know, a painting that I'm doing for someone.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's, and I never thought that it would get to that point. But when you stick to what you know and what you love and what, and you show that and you're unapologetic about it.
Yes.
Which is the key.
Yes.
You gotta be unapologetic, because I'd be like, hey, you know, like, okay, I'll draw your Pokemon.
Yeah,
I'll draw your Pokemon.
I'll draw
your Pokemon. I can do that. Yeah, it's all right. Okay. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When you do that, people see that. People respect it. And if they want it, they'll buy it.
Sure.
So.
I mean, our audience is going to place a value. At least in most cases, they place a value on our work. I mean, our work is only worth what people are willing to invest in. And, that's fair. Once that starts happening, that's when any creator has a decision to make. Okay, am I going to continue to appease them? I mean like the fans. Am I going to continue to provide what they want, and go down that road? But then you're surrendering your ambition to them, right?
Right.
Or like you did. Okay, I understand now. I do have the skill. When you sold that Cloak and Dagger, you realize right then you have the skill where people will now are willing to appreciate your work to the point where they're willing to invest in it.
Yeah.
So now the decision you have is, am I going to continue to go down that path? Or am I going to create a new path and see who's willing to follow me down that one?
Right.
Right? And that's where I think every creator comes to that point. That's the point I'm at right now in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what that, because I didn't know about that, dude. That's going to be cool, your little Cyborg series. I'm really interested to see how you'll handle that and what you're going to do with that.
So I have a couple. Right now I already have one I put on Instagram. It's green. I have another one I finished. It's purple. I haven't put it up yet. I can tell you, that's the opportunity I have. That's my biggest opportunity. In some ways, I can be a little introverted. So when it comes to social media, my wife's always telling me, you got to put up more. You got to be more involved, you know? You can't just put something up every 6 months. And that is so true because if you want people to appreciate what you do, it's not just about, hey, look at me. It's about, hey, we're going to go down this journey together. Yeah. We're going to socialize. Obviously, social media, right? Some people are following you because they appreciate what you got.
Right. And it's your brand.
And it's your brand.
You gotta build that brand. And right now, that is how brands are built, social media.
Especially in this day and age. Yeah. It's free advertisement. It's a free opportunity, right? We don't have to go to different art galleries and solicit ourselves, you know?
So true.
And, you know, there's a time even as artists, we're fans. We want to enjoy looking at other people's art and seeing what they create. So it's an opportunity for us to do that without having to go to a gallery. We can do it from the comfort of our own phones or our own computers.
Isn't that awesome? It's too cool.
Yeah.
So, man, that was good talking about your art, man. So I want you to keep it up, bruh.
Yes.
Doing it.
Yes, because there was a time.
Yeah, there was, dude.
When I got discouraged.
Yeah.
Actually, there was a couple
many
times.
Many times, bro.
There was a few times.
Many times. There were like 6 to 8 month stints. Like, I don't know if I can do the deal right.
Yeah, so.
6 months later, come back. So, question.
Oh, that is it. You know what? I may have started in 2009, but if I'm being perfectly honest, it wasn't until 2015 where I sat myself down and I actually had to make a deal with my wife, and I said, listen, I won't buy anything because she was done with me investing. I said, but if I can give you 6 months of traditional work and you see that I'm doing it regularly, every week I'm putting something out, will you let me invest in it, in like in a tablet, right? Or a Wacom tablet. She says, okay, give me 6 months. So I did it from March to October.
Sure did, dude.
And I sure did get
it. You sure did
do it,
bro.
And I did. And then ever since. This has been what I've done. And now I've enjoyed. I got Sac Anime coming up in a few weeks. I got Toy Con coming up in August. I got Silicon Valley coming up in August. And I think that's all I have scheduled for this summer. But I enjoy maybe half a dozen shows a year.
Okay.
But I'm having a great time.
That's dope.
Yeah, I'm having a great time.
Because doing that art, man, that artist alley is amazing.
It is.
Because you're around great artists, famous artists.
Yeah.
And that inspiration too fuels you even more, man. When
that's
you get
true.
Done, you're just like, oh.
I was so nervous the first time I went because I thought, okay, the other artists are going to eat me alive. Mm-hmm. I thought it was this big war almost. I envisioned this thick competition with all artists, like, you know, like there are soldiers on a battlefield, and it's nothing like that. It's just everyone is there. They got their own style, their own material, their own fans. They got their own stuff. You're simply neighbors, and you have conversation. You learn a lot.
Yeah.
And honestly, some of the biggest opportunities I get aren't really from social media. I mean, that's a way to keep your fans up to date.
Right.
But it's getting in front of people.
Yes.
And having a conversation with them. That's what fans like. And that's what we like as creators. We like to have that interaction. Otherwise, how do we know where to go next?
And keep up that good work, Blair. Thanks, man. We got some other things to talk about, which we shall. we'll let that go in. I love how in this place right here, like I was in the bathroom, and I'm like, oh crap, there's no place to wash your hands. Mm-hmm. I go out, it's right in the middle, outside,
okay,
with both the bathrooms. So if you don't wash your hands, everybody knows you don't wash your hands. I love that. Yeah, that's so dope. I think a lot of businesses should implement that. That's cool.
Wait a minute. Let me just ask.
Okay.
This is the same dude, just so I know. This is the same
Twilight bathroom. Twinkles.
Okay, yeah.
It's Twinkles, bro. Robert Pattinson has been chosen as the new Batman.
Is this thing on, dude?
Matt Reeves. Yeah, it's on, bro. He has been chosen. He is the new chosen one for the new Matt Reeves Batman film.
So my question, is this a continuity or is this a whole new?
It's whole new. It's whole new. It's a younger Batman.
Okay.
Earlier in the career. We apparently are supposed to be getting the world's greatest detective, finally.
Okay.
Not just the fighter, not just the brawler. We're supposed to be getting the detective. People are saying Robert Pattinson's acting skills have improved tremendously since Twinkle Time, aka
based
Twilight. They say he's acting a lot of independent films. He's been honing his craft.
Okay.
Not in the mainstream public eye, but
sometimes
you know,
that's the best.
Yeah.
So, but
you know what? We were wrong about a lot of actors, though, before, thinking that they couldn't play certain roles.
Yes.
And,
I agree.
You know,
Heath Ledger.
That was the biggest mistake we all made.
Yeah.
As fans, as observers, and everything.
Yep.
And Heath Ledger, unfortunately, passed as being, hands down, one of, if not the best portrayal of the Joker on film.
In some ways, even the best superhero villain on
ever.
Film.
Yeah. I mean, he just blew it out the water. So we were completely wrong about him. And we didn't even see that coming. We didn't even see an inkling of him being possibly able to portray that or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Right. And I know, I don't know that much about the Twilight series. I never really got that involved in the movies, but I do know there were some choreograph and fighting that he had to learn during his making of that. So it's not like this guy has never been in the action superhero type role.
Right. But it's not what we're looking for.
It's not what we're looking for, because Batman, by the definition, he's a larger guy in stature. He's well over 6 foot tall.
That's what he became later. More bigger.
Yeah.
Like the Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Batman, we got that's age, that's time. You know, he had to get re-ripped in order for him to be anything. You know, he's getting in his frail state, so in order for him to get back into the suit, he had to bulk up. That's the only way. You know, you can't be lanky and old and still be trying to be back. He had to bulk up. There had to be that intimidation.
But even like when you're younger,
but when you're younger, you can be that. I mean, Spider-Man's a good example of that. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's yoked up.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he's slimmer. He's a little toned down. Yeah. He's more limber, more quicker, more agile, more limber.
Right.
I think they'll buff him up. Like I said, my big thing, I'm just like, ugh, but I'm not going to have any strong opinions.
Sure.
Because, again, we've been proven wrong so many times over these last, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
That to do that prematurely, I think, would be mistaken.
And these studios, when they go through the whole, you know, precast, they have to see something in these individuals that maybe we don't see. You know, when they're looking, whoever their vision is for Batman at the time, Ben Affleck, in my opinion, was someone we broke the internet. No one wanted him to be Batman after his Daredevil thing.
Yeah.
But he turned out to be a pretty likable guy. I really liked him in that role.
He was great as Batman.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching him. And, you know, so it showed that he's even matured over the years.
Yeah, right. Batman is just a character too. Maybe I could ask you this. After this Batman is done and completed.
Talking about this new one?
Yeah. Are you done for a little bit? For me personally, I think I'll be done for a little bit.
You know,
I think
I'll be good. I never felt like it got started. Now, before you.
Yeah.
Let me explain what I mean.
Okay.
Every group of Batman movies has seen an evolution. Even within that segment that, you know, we start off as one, and by the time it was done, we got something completely different.
Right.
I never really felt like it finished. Is it
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I never really felt like it finished.
Right.
Right? And I'll give you an example of the Batman Begins.
Uh-huh.
We really got off to see the whole ninja disappearing thing that he had, how we got trained. I wasn't too impressed with the choreograph by the time I got 2-3 movies in.
Right.
I really wasn't, I'll be honest. And we never did see the detective side of him.
No, we sure did not.
We never did. And
no. I don't think we've ever seen this. The closest we got was Michael Keaton.
Yes, the first one.
The very first one. And that was a little taste of that, whereas like that potential was there. But nothing full on.
You know, someone once said, I don't remember, maybe it was you, but someone was saying to me that one of the best portrayals, if we had to put a movie as an example of him being the detective, would take like the Saw movies. I've only seen one or two of those, okay? If I'm being honest, I haven't.
That should be the Riddler.
And it should be.
The Riddler needs to be the Saw.
It would take detective-minded person to solve that and maybe even be trapped in one yourself and get out of it. Because that would still give us the darker, grimmier Batman, right? And villain. And it also require some type of finesse, fighting and action and choreographing and his mind. It would be a way to bring it all together.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
Now, when I say, well, we start with one Batman and we end with something else, with the Michael Keaton, we are off to a great start. But somehow that fourth one, it didn't really end the way.
Yeah, bobblehead George Clooney was not it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had some stuff there that we just were not ready for. And when we saw it on the big screen, there was like fluorescent lighting and there was all this stuff.
Glow sticks.
Yeah.
Batman Forever became a rave, bro. Batman Forever and Batman and Robin were raves.
It was, I don't know what it was. You know, and then even the one with Bane. Bane was a great villain. I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, cut that out.
But I never saw the finesse, the fighting finesse like that Ben Affleck brought to it. I never saw that.
Yes, we saw a brawler in Batman versus Superman.
And you could have literally...
Yeah. We saw a brawler,
and that's
dude.
What I think people wanted to see. And even the director said...
This is thinking murderer in Batman versus Superman, bro. Even though that movie was trash, that was the sickest portrayal of Batman I've seen thus far.
Why can't... I want to keep that consistent. Because by the time Bane came around, he was just throwing hard punches at people.
That's true.
And I don't want to see a movie where a guy is throwing random punches.
Out in the daytime, getting tired.
It looked like a Rocky movie in the daytime on the middle of the street. And that's not Batman. He's just literally casually walking around. At that point, you almost look ridiculous. Like, take the costume off and put on something, you know what I mean? And I hope I'm not going to give you any type of, you know, lash back from the fans about what I'm saying. I'm just trying to be honest. I really appreciate when a person puts a story together and they keep it consistent.
Yeah.
And we see people struggling sometimes with TV series where it starts off really, and then they run out of ideas. They realize, wow, this is a success. Yeah. When you made Batman Begins, they probably didn't envision that they were going to make another whatever. And so some...
I don't know. With Christopher Nolan behind the wheel, I think they did. I think Christopher Nolan's focus... I mean, I personally enjoyed the Batman films, Chris Nolan films. The problem is Chris Nolan has a tendency to be too cerebral to the point where he forgets the essence of a certain thing.
Right.
So Batman is one of those situations where I think he got a little too cerebral.
Yeah.
Where it's like you forgot about Batman, you know what I mean?
Yeah, first you're the shadows, and by the time the series is over, you're in the daytime with glow sticks.
Right.
That's what we got in Batman and Robin, right? Glow sticks. Everything had a fluorescent look to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the first movie, he was in the shadows with the steam, the pellet bombs, and he's there, now he's there, now he's not. We got that Batman Begins, first he's there, now he's...
So that was a fun adventure.
Yeah, so we had to take a little pause break there. Yeah, we had incident number two.
Yeah.
As our Friday night goes on.
I was going to say, I was going to see how many we can get.
Oh, we got a couple more before this is done.
That's funny, dude. But now, we'll just have to see with Robert Pattinson, dude, and see what he brings to the table, see what he comes out with. I don't want to prejudge. I want to prejudge, but I'm not going to prejudge. You know, because I only see a part.
We're passionate about these characters. We want to see them portrayed right. Sometimes, not to stereotype, but. We all look at Batman as being the 6'3", 200-pound brawler, and when we get a guy who, I don't know who this guy is, it doesn't fit our preconception of who Batman is already.
Right. I feel like with the Batman films, I just feel like there needs to, it just needs to stop. there's been a lot of Batman films out. If you really think of it, there are a lot of Batman films.
There are a lot of Batman films.
And there aren't a lot of Superman films because for some reason they can't nail Superman just right. I personally love Man of Steel.
Yeah.
Personally. Batman Superman, though, was trash.
You know what?
That wasn't my Superman. That Superman was so doubtful and so...
Oh, man. Podcast.
Yeah, it is.
It
was just an atrocity.
The problem with Superman, if I may say, is that he's such a powerful character, too. How do you write him into a script and not upset half the fan base? And then when he's too soft, you upset the other half, right? I mean, you had Superman Returns. Half people loved it.
First off, Superman Returns doesn't count. Superman Returns is Superman 4.
Sure.
Superman 3.
Sure. And some people were upset. Were like, well, he was just saving people from natural disasters all movie. And he fell in love with Lois. Well, that's what some of you wanted.
The most forgettable Lois on the planet, by the way.
And I agree with that. And then when we got the brawler in Man of Steel, now you have the other thing. What? Well, now he's destroying cities. It's like, well, you have to choose. When you put a character that powerful in a film, he can only go up fairly against someone at equal size, right? It was this Zod.
Right.
How do you think the city's going to look when they're done fighting?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you had...
This isn't a football game.
This isn't a football game. Yeah. Right? And you had not just Zod, but you had three, or technically his whole ship.
Yeah.
So his whole crew were superpowered Kryptonians.
Yeah.
And they were like, either you kill us, or we'll kill all of them. There's going to be some leveling buildings.
Yeah.
Now, you could have taken the fight into the desert.
They could have done that. Did his DBZ and all of a sudden just appeared
and
in the desert.
And then what? It would have been a Rocky match in the... Right? Half the appeal of the Superman movies is seeing him destroy or pick something up or do something with buildings or cars, and we like seeing just how powerful these characters are.
And it sucks because Henry Cavill was such an amazing Superman.
I agree.
He was the first, Christopher Reeve, yes, he is Superman. Sure. He's always going to be Superman. But he was the best Superman for that time.
Yeah.
For our time, I mean, he literally walked out of a Jim Lee comic book, in my opinion.
Who was that?
Henry Cavill.
Oh, yeah.
As absolutely. Superman. He was the most amazing. And he even looked great in Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah.
The look of the movie was great. Everything came. I mean, we saw the Trinity for the first time. We saw Wonder Woman for the first time.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. There were a lot of great moments.
Yeah.
But just the film as a whole was just, ugh. And Doomsday was done so wrong.
I couldn't agree more. They were trying to tell a story that was based on the fact that two characters have known each other for decades. And they were trying to tell that story to two characters who just met each other for the very first time.
Right.
And that would not work. What made Now, what makes Frank's books or graphic novels so emotionally captivating was that these characters obviously had known each other for a long time, so there's already that division. There's already that, well, you have a choice. Either you take me down, we take this to the next level, or you stand down. That only works when two characters know each other's weaknesses and strengths.
Right.
You put that into a film, I mean, I can go about this all day. But I tell you, the point that where I was lost is when they first met on that rooftop for the first time. And they were trying to recreate that scene in the comics where Batman and Superman were facing each other for the first time. You knew this was a moment it was going to go down.
Right.
In the comics. You're like, here it is.
Here we go.
But let me ask you something. That was because Batman knew very specifically that Superman would not kill him. Mm-hmm. Because he had known Superman for years. He already knew the man. This movie, Batman didn't know that. Batman thought Superman was on the verge of snapping and killing everybody. That was his whole argument the whole movie. So why would you hide your greatest weapon two blocks away or wherever that spear was? Right? Why are you turning this into a slapping match or a peeing contest?
Right.
And gosh, man, the movie was it was trying to be that, and there was no way it could without two people just really going at it. And let's be honest, if the two had gone at it in that beginning, we wouldn't have gotten the fight we saw.
There's so many scenes in general, dude, where he just got slapped and punched by Superman. He didn't even really hit him that hard, where he should have been dead, no matter what kind of suit of armor he had on. You know?
He threw him from the... Have you seen the uncut version?
Yes, I have. Own it.
You own it?
I own it.
So...
Yeah. I can't be a fan. I mean, yeah, the movie's garbage, but I can't call myself a fan and not own it, you know?
So there were scenes in the fight that they took out of the theatrical version where he's going through walls and buildings.
Yes.
And
there's some times it's like, how did he even get up?
Right.
How did he even... Yeah.
And he walked out of that without a scratch. His suit was banged up. Now, by principle, we should all survive a car accident. We're surrounded by aluminum and metal. Now, I know it's a movie. Sure.
Yeah, it's fantasy.
But you can't bend the rules in Batman's favor, but not in Superman's favor.
Exactly.
And that's what they did. They go, wait a minute.
And it made Superman look like he was weak. I still have a huge issue with the kryptonite fart bombs.
Yeah.
And then for him to get into that two times.
Yeah.
Like he's not smart enough to learn the first time. I don't care how much fighting or distraction you got. When you're fighting, you learn how to adapt to your situation and to a fight in general. What kind of techniques, whatever, you adapt to
you
that.
You see, you pee, I'll get off the pot.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you're not here to kill me.
Yeah.
Then hold him down and tell him why you're there. He started to in the beginning of the fight. He says, hey, Lex, and then he just stopped
trying.
Wrong.
Yeah,
and then
he stopped trying.
It's like, so what are you trying to do then?
Yeah.
You have the power to kill him.
Yeah, if you don't kill him, kill him. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think they tried to give us a fight that really no one really cared to see.
Nobody cared to see. It just wasn't brought up in the correct context.
No, it wasn't.
It was done in the most terrible context ever. And with somebody who didn't even have that huge of an influence to begin with, Lex Luthor was terrible.
Neither one of the characters felt he was credible enough to be the center of their argument.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest, right? I mean, and the fact that, the world's greatest detective, quote unquote, fell into that trap.
Exactly.
That was a loophole for a lot of Batman fans.
Yeah.
And I'm not particularly a huge Batman fan. I mean, I like the character. Right. I don't agree with the way those two were portrayed in the movie.
Right.
I have my issues with that. And I'm looking at this from someone who's not been around those comics for years and years as more of a movie fan.
Right.
It just didn't really make sense to me why they would have to go that route to begin with. Anyway. So not to drag this thing down.
But with this new film, I just hope they fix and correct a lot of those mistakes. I am looking forward to seeing the world's greatest detective, though. I really hope that they go in on that majorly.
Yeah.
Because we have not yet seen that at all. Like I said, the taste of that we got was with the Michael Keaton Batman. But it was just a small taste.
It was a small taste, and looking back over that, it was like you didn't even realize it was a problem that needed that big of an answer to fix.
Right.
Until it was being fixed. He came down, he had the big giant scissors, took the balloons away. Okay. Right. Yeah. And in 1989, that worked.
That worked.
Yeah, we loved it. Exactly. Right? Yeah. Now I need something a little more intelligent. I want to believe that our character could lose or be wrong. I want to believe that.
dude. I love this place, man. I love Sac. It's cool. Yeah, so that's good, dude. That's awesome. So that's it for this week's episode of the Stuff Podcast Show. I want to thank you guys so much for listening in and taking the time with me to talk some more about news, entertainment, life, all the different stuff that I usually talk about. You guys are so awesome, so amazing, and I really appreciate you guys. Content is growing on a constant basis, and I would love for you guys to continue spreading the word and participating in the community, the social community that I'm trying to build. I'm over on Facebook, so follow the Facebook group, The Stuff Podcast Show. You can also find me on Twitter, at The Stuff IDW, on Instagram, The Stuff Podcast Show. And you can also send me an email. Give me your feedback on the shows, what you think, any show suggestions, topics, and ideas. You can always send them there, and I'll be sure to read them. And I take these suggestions and read them aloud on the What You Say Breath segment of my show. You can shoot an email to me at thestuffpodcastshow@gmail.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate you all very much, and I look forward to chatting and hanging with you guys again next week on The Stuff Podcast Show.